everyone. Welcome to Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns. I'm Rosemarie Truman, founder and CEO of the Center for Advancing Innovation, and we have the sincere pleasure of having Marty Rosendale on the call today. So welcome, Marty.
Rosemarie, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
I would love it if you could just provide a little bit of information about your background and what you're doing now.
Sure. So my background is a little bit unique. I actually started out as an engineer, but my passion was always microbiology and biology. So I started my first company, and essentially I was a job shopper. I did tool design for injection molding for plastics, and I used that to put myself through college where I studied microbiology. Hmm. I got out of college right around the time when HIV was a big problem. I'm talking about the mid-80s. I got involved with a group out of the American Red Cross that was focused on community education on HIV and AIDS. And that kind of got me interested in biological therapeutics and the whole biotech space, if you will. And that kind of started my career from there. So I went to work for the Red Cross in their biomedical services division for about 10 years. Left there after helping them build a number of sales organizations, got into biotechnology with a company out in California called Sangstat, helped them launch their first two products. And my career has taken me back and forth across the country a few times. It seems there were never any jobs for me in the middle of the country. It was always a coast-to-coast move. But stayed with biotechnology, ultimately became the general manager of a U.S. organization called ZLB Bioplasma, which was the predecessor to what is now known as CSL Behring. They recruited me in 2001 to build the U.S. operation. We took that organization, built it from startup to about $200 million per year in the course of 3 years, and then merged it with Aventis Behring to form what is now CSL Behring. And then after that, became the CEO of two Maryland-based biotechnology companies, one focused on the cryopreservation of living tissues, and the other one a wound care company.
Excellent. You have an amazing background, being a two-time founder and exiter. That's mm-hmm. awesome. So as a two-time founder and CEO, you know, what were the advantages of being in Maryland near regulatory bodies for you?
Well, you know, there's a lot of advantages. First of all, just the wealth of experience and knowledge here is amazing. The number of people that have spent time working at the FDA, at CMS, at other government agencies, and that have come out and now have that knowledge and are willing to share it with others is fantastic. But the value of being in close proximity to the FDA or to CMS is the ability to sit down and meet with them face to face. If you're in some other part of the country or some other part of the world and you need to talk with the FDA, so often that conversation is by conference call. Mm-hmm. And what I found, I use this example a lot because I think it makes the point, but I found that one time I needed to have a very important conversation with the FDA, and the person that I was talking to said, well, there's about 12 of us that need to be on that in that conversation.
Wow.
And so we'll set up a conference call. And I said, well, that's all great, but are you all going to be in the same room? And he said, yes. And I said, great, I'll be there too. And you really can't do that easily if you're in some other part of the country or some other part of the world. And the ability to, when you're talking with the regulatory experts, the ability to see the body language, to see more than listening to the conversation, you understand who your supporters are, you understand who your antagonists are, mm-hmm. if you will, and where you need to focus your time and attention. And I believe that it takes months off of the development process if you can get to the bottom of that quickly.
That's wonderful. I mean, body language is so telling, right?
Yes.
We speak more through our body language than our voices oftentimes.
Absolutely.
So how quickly were you able to arrange that meeting? It sounds like it was in short order.
A couple of weeks.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, fabulous. So from the point of view about, you know, the state of Maryland, the region here, and federal legislation, you know, what do you think the advantages are, or what do you think startups can take advantage of being in this region, being in the state? And what do you think they can take advantage of from a federal standpoint?
Well, there are so many things, Rosemary. I think, you know, you're very, very familiar with the intellectual property that exists within the yes. government and federal labs.
Right? Yes. It's ground zero. We're in ground zero. 75,000 inventions sitting right here.
That's right. Absolutely. And the ability for a startup to look at that and take advantage of some of that intellectual property to expand their own portfolio, to strengthen their intellectual property position by getting to know what exists, what's possible, you know, meeting the right people, whether it's at the NIH or some other federal laboratory, and being able to take advantage of that intellectual property, I think is amazing. You talked about it at the federal level. I mean, there are also local, state, and regional tax incentives and tax credits and opportunities to facilitate funding because of those tax credits. And so there's no end really to the opportunity.
Could you describe some of the tax credits that you know of that are, you know, just amazing and every single startup should take advantage of it from a state standpoint?
Well, since we're talking about life sciences and I guess I neglected to mention my current role in addition to being an advisor to other CEOs, I'm the CEO of the Maryland Technology Council. And so I get heavily involved with the legislature about the tax credits and about the incentives for innovation and entrepreneurs in Maryland. And on the life sciences side, probably the best and most effective tax credit that we have is the biotechnology investor tax credit. Mm-hmm. And that tax credit allows an investor to receive a credit on their taxes, or if they're outside the state, actually a check from the state. Wow. For up to 50%, even 75%, if you're depending on where you're located within the state, of that investment that they made into the biotechnology company. Now, it's limited. The total cap, the amount that the state puts into that every year, is $12 million. And so it gets oversubscribed every year, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. But for an early stage company, the ability to give their investor that kind of a tax break or that kind of incentive reduces the risk. And so much of the investment process and the capital markets is about managing risk. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very significant tax credit as a result.
Marty, how does that compare to other states?
All the states have incentives, and the incentives vary broadly. I think Maryland's biotechnology investor tax credit is probably one of the best tax credits for life sciences companies within the country. But other states have SBR matching funds and mm-hmm. and research and development tax credits and other types of programs that are intended to support innovation and entrepreneurship. So making a direct comparison is a little bit difficult, mm-hmm. but we're very competitive with respect to other states in the country.
So going back to the first question about, you know, what can you take advantage of from a regulatory standpoint? If you change that a bit, what could you take advantage of from the point of view of SBIR grants? I'd love to get your perspective on, you know, how the face-to-face interaction or the body language that you were mentioning earlier could mm-hmm. also influence SBIR grant making. Do you think that there's anything there, or do you think it's not?
You know, I think there's some value there. I know I personally have never been in a position where any of my companies applied for or received an SBIR grant. Mm-hmm. However, there is the Maryland, was it the Maryland Industrial Partnership, the MIPS grants? Mm-hmm. I have applied for those, and the way these grants often work is that there is an individual there, or maybe even a group of individuals that you work with that will help you through the process. And it's very good to get to know them, because it is their job to help you. It's their job to hold you by the hand, take you through the process, make sure you do it well, make sure you do it accurately. But then there's a review process, and you don't typically get to meet those reviewers in advance. Mm-hmm. And so the proximity, and sometimes those reviewers, especially if it's a federal program, those reviewers may not even be in the local region. So getting to know the people that are there to help you is a tremendous value, but it doesn't provide you with any kind of
leg up,
special benefit or a leg up with respect to the review process of the grant. And frankly, it shouldn't. That review process should be unbiased and the same and equal for everyone that applies.
Well, so you mentioned earlier about the IP, which of course, you know, we work with 27 federal labs that are right around this neighborhood. And I think we have about 75,000 inventions from those federal labs, mm-hmm. which is incredible. And the inventions are bar none, fabulous. The work that we do in our federal government in creating R&D is just incredible. Most of the inventions that we've actually commercialized have been out of the federal labs. And so we've actually launched about 300 companies over mm-hmm. the last few years, and about 40 of them are in this local region. And so I was just wondering if you had a perspective on the technology transfer that's occurring in the region. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you think we're doing a good job? You think there's something that could be improved? Commercializing those inventions are the foundational products of GPS and the modern smartphone and Tempur-Pedic and all kinds of things. And
sure.
I could bore you all day long with inventions that dance in my head.
So Rosemary, first of all, I want to say the work that you do is amazing. And the number of companies that you've gotten off the ground and the technology that you're commercializing. I don't know anyone that's done more in that space than you have. So
thank
first
you.
Of all, kudos to you and your organization
for what
you've accomplished. So I think we do an okay job with tech transfer. I recently attended, I was on a panel at a Federal Laboratories Consortium meeting and got to meet a number of the tech transfer people from the federal laboratories. And what struck me is there's not a lot of depth in understanding business and business needs among that group, mm-hmm. which is why they invited people like me and the others that were on my panel to present to them and talk to them. So I think we could do a better job, you know, connecting industry and the federal labs and those that hold this intellectual property in connecting them and helping them understand each other's needs and resources and just getting to know each other better. One of the things that struck me with these tech transfer executives and professionals with the federal labs is how much they have to know in order to be effective in their job, because those labs do so many things and have mm-hmm. so many patents and so much intellectual property. For a single tech transfer expert to be able to deal with all of that is pretty amazing, the amount of knowledge that they have to have, or the ability to quickly learn an industry or a product or a field in order to facilitate tech transfer. So I think there's an opportunity for us to better connect and better share information. There's a lot of discussion, particularly with the NIH, around some of the restrictions on the investigators and the researchers, you mm-hmm. know, how they can and can't interact with companies. And I think there's some opportunity for improvement in those rules. But that's not really a legislative, as I see it, not really a legislative issue. It's more interpretation of the rules and regulations by the lab themselves or by the NIH that could use some work. And I understand that historically there have been issues and problems with fraud and other things that are of concern, but I think we could do a better job in helping the researchers and investigators that actually discovered the technology behind these patents work more easily with the companies that would like to commercialize them. I think mm-hmm. there's room for some improvement there. Mm-hmm. But frankly, I think the biggest challenge is how do you manage this massive library of intellectual property? I know you dig into it all the time,
yeah.
But you know, when you've got hundreds of thousands of patents and a company that, you know, maybe they've developed a technology and they've three or four of their own patents, but they could increase their value and improve their intellectual property position by licensing a couple of patents out of the federal government, But how do they find them? How do they know where to look?
Yeah.
How do they search that massive library and find those patents that would be of value to them?
It's a needle in a haystack.
Absolutely.
I mean, our model is that we have built software to pull out of WIPO and USPTO databases,
mm-hmm.
pop them into our database which sorts them into columns, and then augment the data, because as soon as you're dealing with patents, you're dealing with old data. So now we augment it with the most recent information. Then we do a multidimensional segmentation analysis to segment the inventions into like categories. And then we start applying our due diligence models. And, you know, the most inventions we've seen one institution have is about 18,000. Of course, IBM has more than 100,000. IBM is number one and Microsoft's number two. And I actually led IBM's innovation strategy practice globally based on, you know, their patent portfolio and basically trying to institutionalize innovation within large companies. But I wanted to go back to your value point, because I think we did a project for Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
We believe there's a lot of value at stake, as otherwise we wouldn't be doing what we're doing.
Right.
And we found that if we could get 6% more inventions out a year at a 90% failure rate, we could make a $1.5 trillion GDP impact on the U.S. economy.
That's amazing.
And then, you know, by the way, Kaufman did crawl through my numbers. I mean,
mm-hmm.
like more than any other large company or anything else ever, because, you know, it's one of their philosophies that, you know, they're sitting there because there's no value. And if you think about capitalism, you know, if there's value, then people buy, but you mm-hmm. have to be able to find them. Then you have to be able to assess them. Then you have to be able to do a deal. Then you have to be able to access them. So sometimes if it's a stack, for example, software, hardware, mechanical, electrical, and communications, perhaps on top of that, then sometimes they forgot where the software was. They didn't, mm-hmm. they can't locate part of it. So, you know, it's the governance around managing the inventory of inventions is quite challenging.
Right.
And I think that the tech transfer offices are overburdened. I mean, you mentioned the amount of knowledge that they have to understand the brand new industry that they get sucked into every day.
mm-hmm.
You know, and so going back to connecting the tech transfer offices with business, my view, I have a really strong point of view on this. My view is that it should be systematized. There's got to be a way to a turnkey model that would allow that to happen on a regular basis, and also kind of the prioritization of the inventions that could have the highest commercial viability and a push model and a pull model. So at present, most of the times, well, I've observed that most of the times the people in tech transfer offices, they're waiting for people to come to their website, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we had to go, and you know, we work with 100 institutions or 100 plus institutions in the United States. If we had to go to each one's website and get their inventions, that would not work.
Right.
Yeah, because all the data is not harmonized and so on and so forth. And I'll mention something else that we're doing. We're working with the Government Accountability Office on a new model for technology transfer, and in the process of reviewing a document that has been drafted to mm-hmm. create a new model. So I hope that comes to fruition, and we really do transform the space, because it's ripe for transformation. And from an intramural standpoint, we spend $140 to $160 billion a year alone. And altogether, we spend $1 trillion in the U.S.
Right.
A year in R&D. And imagine if we could convert that to impact, knowledge-based jobs, new markets, and you know, talking about life sciences, true impact on human health. Out of the 300 companies we've launched, 200 are life sciences.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're really excited because we're about to make an announcement on another one. So very excited about that.
So if I may ask you a question,
yeah.
the work that you're doing on the tech transfer model, can you share any of the highlights of what
you're doing? Okay. So yes. So imagine that there is a body, an organization that works with these different tech transfer offices that kind of does what we do. We mm-hmm. systematically suck the inventions out, put them into a database, harmonizes the data, augments the data, make sure that the information is, because you have to start with the data. and then starts to do the due diligence. So it's like a shared services model that does the due diligence by categories, like life sciences due diligence and automotive due diligence and so on and so forth. I mean, and by the way, a lot of the inventions fall into multiple categories. So you have to, so for example, with NASA, NASA has about 4,743 inventions. To evaluate their inventions, it was almost 20,000 evaluations we had to do because each invention has multiple applications. So you have to think about every single application that it could have and then do the due diligence that way, because there could be a competitive landscape in one, but no competitive landscape in another. So, so kind of a shared services model there. And then, you know, in each area, for example, of the United States, having a liaison group that would be working with all the universities to then kind of send that information to them from a due diligence standpoint, but not only the due diligence, but which companies would be the right targets. And obviously it doesn't have, sometimes the company doesn't exist. So, you know, we create companies from scratch, from thin air, right, given right, our challenge model. So, so this would be more of a push because you're pushing the invention to organizations that you find relevant. So as part of this due diligence, you're also identifying targets, very specific targets. And then that person on the ground has a couple of roles, working with the universities to make sure that they know the prioritization, the due diligence, and also the targets. But also, if the target is in their market, actively mm-hmm. connecting the invention and the target to get the tech transfer and the target together. So right. that person's role would be knowing the big companies and also knowing the tech transfer offices so that they can connect inventions that might be coming from California to Iowa because there's a connection there that makes sense because the invention should be commercialized by a company there. But then also as it relates to the universities there, and by the way, I think this is going to be more of it like a two-person model in that region because one for the institution, like the companies, and one for the institutions like federal labs, universities, and hospitals. So right. that's, and then, so it's basically a wholly systematic approach where you're driving commercialization. I mean, you're really driving it hard. And another component of it is governance. So when we spend money, where does it go? What did it create? There isn't really any governance. I shouldn't say that exactly the way I just said it, but when I think about governance, I think my background is investment banking and strategy consulting. So I think about governance in a much different way than maybe others do. Like corporate governance is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And you really track things and say, what did we get out of it? And right. that's another component that I really feel strongly about. And that's what's coming in this Government Accountability Office document as well. And those are the two major highlights I would have, like a completely different model, which where you don't really take the technology transfer out of the people's hands, but you're then, right. but you're actually augmenting the entire thing with a model, the entire current state with a model to do what you said, connecting business to tech transfer through this intermediary.
Right. I think that's phenomenal. I love your focus on monitoring and measuring as well. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, like KPIs. Let's have a KPIs across the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And let's make those visible in annual reports for like NASA right. and NIH and so on. So, okay. Well, you are fabulous. You have done some fantastic things and you have your finger on the pulse of a lot of things. So what are your kind of final words of wisdom for our listeners out there, which are tech transfer people, startups? We have a myriad of different people in our audience, but I think that you could, given your unique background and mm-hmm. current situation, I'd love to hear what words of wisdom you have.
Well, I could go on for a lot more than 20 more minutes, but I'll try to keep it brief. First of all, I want to talk just for a second about healthcare and the cost of healthcare because we're facing so much pressure right now to reduce the cost of healthcare overall. We're focused on drug pricing and other issues that I think many of us are concerned if we take this approach where we focus on individual areas instead of the whole system, well, we could have a tremendously negative impact on innovation and entrepreneurship in this country and how it relates to healthcare going forward. And my personal belief is The answer to our problem, and our problem is that we simply can't afford our healthcare system any longer in this country. The answer to our problem is going to be innovation, not curtailing innovation. And there are so many things, so many technologies right now that are in development that will reduce the cost of healthcare through precision medicine applications, through combinations of technology, life science, through the use of technologies like artificial intelligence and other applications, that I believe that this innovation is our hope for reducing the cost of healthcare going forward. And I think there's an opportunity for us in this region, given the talent that we have in both life sciences and technology, to be the leaders in this space.
Absolutely.
To really make a difference, to really help drive down the cost of healthcare overall. And so that's one bit of wisdom, if you will. For those that might be watching this video that are starting up a company or interested in a startup, you know, I would tell you, focus on being prepared for the capital markets. In my work as an advisor to CEOs and my role at the Tech Council, I see so many companies that the leadership team doesn't understand that the capital markets are a market. And yeah, they need to approach it like a market. And so I would just advise you to really, really think about that. Educate yourself. Make sure you understand that the capital markets are a market or a combination of markets, and approach it with a marketing sense, a marketing perspective, if you will, going forward. So those are just two. I have many more, but
we'll have to do another podcast on Marty's words of wisdom. the top 10.
There you go.
Fabulous words of wisdom. And here on both of those items. I just can't be more grateful for your time today and your insights and very valuable insights and sharing it with me and the audience. So thank you so much for coming on to the podcast.
Rosemary, my pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation. And again, I really think the work that you do is amazing. Keep it up. You're doing a fantastic job. And you may single-handedly bring down the cost of healthcare.
Yes! You heard it here first. Thank you, Marty. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you.